good evening, and welcome everyone to Curtain Call, where I spotlight the magic of theater one conversation at a time, and I'm your host, Tom Candela. Tonight on the show, I'm going to take you inside a space where theater is not just presented, it's built, it's tested, and sometimes completely reimagined. We're talking about the North American Cultural Laboratory, or NACL, a creative hub right here in our region that has become a home for artists developing bold, unconventional work. Joining me on the show are Brad Krumholtz, co-founder and executive artistic director of NACL, and Lindsay Anderson. She is the director of Artist Experience. She's also a performer and a playwright, and someone who has experienced that space from the inside out, first as an artist, then as a resident, and now as a guide for others coming through the process. Together, we're going to explore how these productions come to life, what artists discover along the way, and why audiences are becoming an essential part of the experience itself. And then stay tuned later on in the show for yet another episode of The Roving Thespian. That's me. So curtain up and take a seat in the room and get ready to learn just exactly how theater is made from the ground up. This is Curtain Call on Radio Catskill. You know what to expect when you walk into their theater. Well, think again, because at NACL, you might find yourself solving a murder mystery on a dance floor, sitting inside a quiet, deeply personal space of shadow puppetry, or even participating in a performance that engages not just your mind, but your senses in ways that you did not anticipate. Joining me are two artists at the center of that work, Brad Krumholtz. He returns to the show. Hi, Brad.
Hello.
And he plays a key role, of course, in shaping NACL's programming, being the artistic director, and bringing together artists, ideas, and experiences that push well beyond traditional theater. And then we have Lindsay Anderson. She is the director of artistic experience at NACL. We're going to learn about what that role means. She is a performer, a playwright, and a founding member of Bread Arts Collective. And what makes Lindsay's story particularly compelling is that she's experienced NACL from multiple angles, first as an artist herself, then as an artist in residence, and now as someone who is helping shape the experience for other artists. So together we're all going to explore today what's been discovered over the past year, how these projects are developing, and going to look at it from the inside out. So I want to welcome both of you to Curtain Call.
Thank you, Tom.
Thanks for having
us. That was a lovely introduction.
Well, thank you. So, as I said, the big season that you had last season, Brad, I had the opportunity of seeing a couple of the shows. And one of them was, I'm going to bring it right up because Lindsay's here, Merlin Dancer Disco Inferno. When I entered in there, it was a full experience from the moment I walked on the property, not even into the theater. Tell us, Lindsay, a little bit about how that was developed. What was your role in bringing that to NACL?
Yeah, well, luckily my theater company, Bread, has developed a decade-long relationship with NACL. Mm. We first started as being part of the Deep Space Residency Program, and we brought one of our original pieces to NACL in 2016. So it has been 10 years now, and there was such resonance that we felt from the very beginning. And we've been able to come back and bring several shows. And so when last year when we started to talk about what will this fall hybrid performance event be, very naturally, I think I wanted to be like, well, I'm sure that Bread can come up with something because that's something that we tend to do really well. Probably by just the pressure of our experience making theater in the city, you don't have a lot of time, you've got to do a lot really fast.
Yeah.
And so we tend to make plays that are kind of an immersive experience that tries to draw people in from the very beginning. Sure. So we knew that we wanted Murder on the Dance Floor, Disco Inferno, to feel that way, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's been quite a journey to kind of develop that ethos amongst us and begin to execute it very well. We've gotten better through the ages, and it's been nice to have that sort of development occur at NACL. It's been a home away from home for us as a New York City-based company.
Sure. And Brad, that experience came through the Deep Space Residency Program, right, mm-hmm. that you have
yeah.
there, which I think is a big part of NACL. Remind the audiences of what that program is and,
sure.
and what you do there.
Absolutely. It's called the Deep Space Performance Residency Program. Mm-hmm. And it's been in existence officially for about 15 years now. But before that, one of the things that we were was a theater company that created our own work, very much like Bread Arts Collective. I guess when they were kids, we were making our own performances. And the space at NACL was our laboratory where we could take a long time to really delve into our creative process and sometimes take up to a year or more to develop a performance. But when we weren't making our own performances, we would host other companies who are friends of ours to come and just like make their own shows there. And sometimes they would stay there for like a whole summer mm-hmm. and they'd be working on something and we'd be working on something. And that's when we started to realize the potential that the place had to host other people than just us to be creating their work. And I guess, yeah, it was around whatever Lindsay just said, 2016 or so, when Bread Arts Collective applied to when we had officially started the program about 5 years before that or so. And we started an application process because at first it was just through conversations with me. And they applied. And I remember looking at their video and thinking, God, this is a really wild group of young theater makers. They're really, really out there. They're doing some crazy stuff. It's like kind of offensive in some ways. And like, it really got my attention. And it occurred to me just somehow, sometimes when you see some kind of like someone's support materials, like their visual materials for their performances,
yeah.
sometimes you really can't get a sense of what they're doing. But in this instance, I really was able to get a sense of the liveness and the vibrancy.
For this particular
of
show.
This show. Yeah, yeah. What was it called? Rise and Fall?
Rise and Fall. It's okay. based on a Bertolt Brecht operetta called The Rise and Fall of Mahogany.
Yeah. Okay.
And that was the first introduction to Lindsay and her thing.
And I invited them up. And it turns out that my instinct was right and that it was just apparent by all accounts, it was an incredible experience for the audience and for the artists who were there. And then since then, I would invite them back in different ways. They were artists in residence for one summer, and we invited them to take part in developing a new piece as part of this larger festival that we did. And pretty much at every chance I get to have Bread Arts Collective do something at NACL, I take it.
Nice.
Because I just love that they're amazing people, and they do incredible work,
yeah.
and they're so creative and brilliant to a person. And I'm just really committed to supporting their work. And one of the focuses that I've had for the past few years that I've resumed full-time leadership of NACL is I'm really focused on making sure that we are sustainable. And for me, sustainability is not just about environmental impact. It's really about the human toll that all of this work takes. And for so long, theater endeavors have relied on what's generally referred to as, I'm sure you're familiar with, sweat equity, mm-hmm. which is that you don't get paid for your work, but boy, oh boy, it's going to be good for you somehow in the future
for
you to be doing all
exposure.
This work for free. And we've reached a point in the theater cultural economy where that's not really okay anymore. At least in my eyes, it's not okay. I'm really about supporting people for their labor time. And so we're moving as much as possible more and more to what I hope is a fully sustainable model in which the people who work at and for NACL, they get paid for their time, and we try not to ask people to work more than they are comfortable working for the amount that they're getting paid.
Mm-hmm.
And pay can come in the form of different things like food and chefing and the space and all of that, yeah. but also for salaries and payroll and all of that. We're really trying to be mindful of the time that everyone takes to spend on these things and how valuable it is.
Yeah, well, there's quite a lot of valuable just in being allowed to have that time. We have to think of, right, Lindsay, you have to think pretty much of nothing else but what you're working on in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to worry about where you're sleeping tonight mm-hmm. or you don't have to worry about who's cooking or what you're eating. That's all taken care of
mm-hmm.
as part of this program, which is huge for the artist.
100%. Yeah. You're not in this fight or flight state that you always are in the city. You're always like, can we afford a rehearsal space? You know,
right.
it's massive, all the things that you have to do in the city in order to be able to mount a show and produce a show. And when you come to a place like NACL, like when I first came, I was like, I cannot believe that a place like this exists.
Mm.
I always thought that I would have to choose between art and nature. And Here, you don't have to do that. They feed into each other, and it allows so much to come to the surface when you're not having to worry about, where am I going to eat? How right. are we going to afford to do this? So there's this lovely homogeny of just like comfort and deep respect for the time and the effort it takes to make something. So in that way, I found NACL an outlier.
Yeah, yeah. And it really is. And it is. It's wonderful that we're very fortunate to have you up here, Brad, and to offer that to these artists, because we get to see the results of that hard work, yeah. which we may not see had you not provided that opportunity for them.
Yeah, thank you. And also, I think one thing that I'll add to that is one of the phrasings that I like to use is that at NACL, we don't present product, we share process. And so, yeah, we're seeing the results of the hard work that the artists are engaged in, but we're also seeing the hard work itself. Mm-hmm. And I think the demystification of the labor of theater is one of the sort of side goals that I have as a theater creator and thinker, is that theater doesn't just come out of nowhere. It requires massive amounts of time and energy from so many people. And I think the more the public can see that, the more they can actually understand how the economy of culture functions. Mm-hmm. And then they can be more ready and willing to support that economy. Because the more people know about the process, the more they can understand why it requires their support.
Yeah, I think that really does help to see what happens behind the scenes, to see something growing from its roots. And you get that opportunity coming to see some of the shows there. But the Murder on the Dance Floor, that to me seemed almost like a finished product. It was so immersive. The scene, the costumes that you've had, the way you decorated the set, meaning the whole space. Mm-hmm. There wasn't particularly a stage. The stage was the space where we were sitting in it. We were immersed in the experience of it, and the performers engaged with us directly.
Yeah.
How do you rehearse for the uncertainty of what goes on in a performance like that?
That's an excellent question. You have to kind of cover all your bases and think about all the potentials in a way and kind of pre-plan how you would react to that. Oftentimes we don't really know what's going to happen, but yeah. I think it's being okay with that. It's almost craving that, because when that happens, then that's so watchable. I think everybody can recognize in an audience when something really real is happening and isn't necessarily rehearsed, but it's handled in a professional, hilarious way.
Yeah.
And I think that was definitely one of I wouldn't say it was necessarily one of the conscious goals of that show, but it is something that we're not afraid of as a collective.
Yeah, it takes a lot of courage as performers yeah. to do that. And a lot of, as you said, I think preparation of things that could happen.
Yeah.
Because you never know how an audience is going to respond
right.
or how they're going to engage or not engage, how you're going to have to pull them in harder
right.
Right. for a particular whatever.
Yeah.
And so each one of those characters engaged in the audience, with the audience in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you don't know if you're going to have someone who doesn't want to participate at all, or
sure.
somebody who's like over participating. It's like, okay, enough of that.
You exactly. know? We had a whole lot of debates as to how many chairs should we put out? Mm. Because we don't necessarily want people to feel like they can sit the whole time, but we don't want to oblige people into feeling they have to disco their hearts out if they really just want to come and watch a show.
Yeah.
So like that was one of the big debates that we were having. Like, how do we guide the horse to water, so to speak, in this kind of experience? And I think that's still going to be one of the questions when we do it again. We're going to revisit the chairs.
So you're going to do it again. Tell yeah. us about what you learned from that evening that you're going to take into the formal production of it.
Well, we also had this question of how we knew that we were going to be doing it here mm-hmm. and we were going to be setting the disco dance party here. So we had this discussion when we were writing it. How much do we want to be specific about Sullivan County? Like, is it good to be specific, or do we need to kind of turn it into a show where you could take it anywhere? And we leaned into Sullivan County specificity. So we filled it with a bunch of inside jokes.
Yeah,
you know,
people recognize
and
names
exactly.
and places.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So
what was the character's name? Sully Sullivan.
Yeah.
That's right.
Sully Sullivan of Sullivan County, the sheriff. You got to lean into the absurdity. But I feel like people really resonated. It made them feel like, oh, this is a world that we are a part of.
What's your name?
My name is Mary Jones.
Mary Jones, wonderful show. What did you think?
I thought it was absolutely wonderful entertainment here in downtown Highland Lake.
What did you think of the acting?
I thought they were fantastic, and they're all part of the community. And the fact that they put it all together and included our everyday life scenarios was, it made us all feel like we were a part of it.
I think we want to continue that as we develop it again, because we will be performing it again at NACL. I think the goal is to take it elsewhere. We have an incredible relationship with the theater in New York City, but I think we still want to keep it based in Sullivan County no matter where we go, mm-hmm. and turn Sullivan County into kind of like the Grover's Corners, like everywhere is Sullivan County, and kind of keep those inside jokes. So that's something that we're going to massage and develop and write more scenes for different characters that didn't have those interactions, so just we just have more content to play with.
Okay.
Yeah.
Will there be a time when the person who dies changes or the person who did it changes?
Great question, but I don't necessarily want to answer
me?
That.
Okay.
Yeah, because there's a little bit like you got to come to find out. And also, there's so much power in the hands of the audience when it's these murder mystery shows, because we kind of set it up, but y'all take the swing and you really decide who the murderer is.
One of the things that I love about Bread Arts Collective, and also about somehow all of the companies that come up to NACL, that if there is any kind of interaction with the audience, everyone is always super, super clear about making sure that the audience never feels uncomfortable, mm-hmm. and never feels like they have to do something that they're really not wanting to do. They never feel on the spot. And I really appreciate that about Lindsay's work with Bread Arts Collective and also these other companies, where like you can say to the listening audience that's hearing us right now, like, oh, you're going to come and you're going to be involved. And all of a sudden you're like, I don't want to go to NACL. I don't want to be called up on stage. Sure. That's never going to happen. Listener.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's never going to happen. Yeah. There will be times when you're asked to stand up or something like that, but it's always done in such a way that it always feels good to me. It always feels like there is consent, mm-hmm. From both the audience and from the performers.
Yeah.
That's like a real fine sensibility of attunement to those moments so that no one ever feels icky about it.
I 100% agree. Having been an audience member in this situation, mm-hmm. Where I was approached, I get from the very beginning. So they do allow for you to say no. And there was no pressure.
Whatever you choose is the right choice.
Yeah, yeah. What's right for you. So when is it happening?
We're going to do it again. And I think it's the third weekend of October this year.
October 24th.
So that's the Saturday before Halloween.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so that was not the only success in your season for 2025. As I mentioned, I did go to see another show there at the Shadow Puppetry, and I can't think of the name.
Fishing Line Sings by Rima Fand and Aaron Orr.
These pieces couldn't be more different. How intentional is that?
I mean, it's definitely built into the decision-making process. Yeah. Last year was the first time that I gathered together what we're calling a curation council. It's a 5-person panel that reviews the applications that are submitted on our online ruling web portal. And there are some directives that I give, but I think core among them, including the way that I gather the curation council, mm-hmm. is really about diversity, the diversity of all kinds. And that includes different racial backgrounds, different geographic backgrounds, different gender backgrounds, all these different experiences that people have from their own personal microcultures influences the kinds of things that they think are important to give voice to and to nurture so that as many different points of view are represented as possible. So that's in the makeup of the curation council. And then when we get together, I encourage the council to lean into their own opinions, mm-hmm. Their own subjectivities, to say, if you like this thing because of who you are, then that's great. That's why you're here. You're here to give your own thoughts about things. And we enter into a really deep and generous conversation about every single submission. The impetus to really consider all of these different points of view is built into the process. And that includes the kinds of theater and performance that we are presenting. And also, is this group at the beginning of their career or are they further along in their career? Mm-hmm. How can we provide opportunities for those who don't normally get them? And so we're really trying to pay attention to all of these things during this process. And I feel really good about the process.
When you're doing that curated process, is there that part of the process where you're considering who your audience is?
There is, to a degree. But again, we come back to this, that we're not presenting product. We are sharing process. And so we don't view ourselves really as a theater per se. We are a laboratory for development of new work. We're supporting the processes of these artists to create what they want to create. And And so my belief is that our local audience, first of all, we've been up here since 1999, mm-hmm. and we've been showing things since 2000. And people know what they're getting when they come to NACL. They know that it's a place where your assumptions about the way the world is in many ways and what aesthetics are and what, you know, and what performance sure. is are going to be stretched. And so people are used to that and they know it. And the audiences for these sharings that we have at the end of the week, they're not designed to be sold out full houses. In fact, if they were sold out full houses, I kind of hesitate to say this, but it's true that if they were, it would be hard for us because sometimes the work is so new and so vulnerable that it would put the artist in a weird position to have mm-hmm. to sort of stand up and share
and
this work that's yeah. just so early on.
Right,
so
right.
generally in this weird, like some like mystical way, we always get the audiences that we need. So if we are presenting a show that is like you were talking about, like Murder on the Dance Floor, mm-hmm. it was something that was really designed to have an audience. And so I guess the way that I say mystical because I'm not really sure how it functions, but I guess it's partly in the way that Brett Kaiser, who's a director of public engagement, gets the word out there. It lets people know that, oh yeah, we need a big audience for this one. And sometimes when it's a really tender, small thing that's just at the beginning of its work, we'll get a dozen or two, a couple dozen people in the audience, and that's it. And in that way, it feels right for the size of what we're trying to do. Mm-hmm. And somehow people migrate towards the kind of work that is interesting to them. And we're really happy to have what feels like an organic relationship with our community that way. And then when our audiences are encountering the processes that we are sharing with them, the things they say actually have an impact.
Mm-hmm.
It actually affects the way the artists think about their work and develop it.
Yeah. Yeah, we're sitting in almost on the rehearsal process for a lot of these shows as opposed to a performance. Yeah. You're really more involved in that with an audience. You're not just sitting there taking it in. I want to talk a little bit about more of last season. The Outrage was the first time last season, wasn't it?
No, it was our second time.
Second time?
Yeah,
okay.
And we're about to do
so
the third one.
So this third one. So how did it go this year?
It was great. I mean, the work that these writers are doing is just, it's mind-blowing to me.
Mm.
For these other playwrights is that like, they just, like, they want to write. They want to sit and they have a world that they want to create on the page. And they just, that's what they want to do. And it just comes out of them. I don't have that. And so I'm always in awe of people who can create a world, especially in play form. Like, it's beyond me. I just have no, I've written scripts for shows.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have done it because I was the only one around to do it, but I was really terrible at it.
I'm sure that's not true.
No, it's really true. The world of the text of my plays that I created has always been the weakest part when I wrote it myself. But people like Lindsay and people like the Outrage writers, like, just to be in the presence of these minds, I'm just in awe of them. And especially with the Outrage being representatives of the queer community who have this unique opportunity that C. Julian Jimenez, who's the leader of this of the Outrage Queer Writers Residency, has created with me,
mm-hmm.
to gather them together so that the question of the queerness of their writing is not the thing that they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It's assumed. It's just assumed that they're all coming from a very similar perspective. And so I'll be in the other room and they'll be like gathered together in the living room at NACL or in the theater. And they're giving feedback on each other's work. And the combination of incisiveness and like scalpel precision in their feedback and fearlessness in the things that they are saying, combined with kindness and generosity, it's unlike anything I've ever experienced. It's simultaneously getting so deep into the work with critique and at the same time, like this loving kindness at the same time, it blows me away.
Wow.
It's also such a privilege to create a safe space for people that oftentimes can feel a sense of prosecution in their lives. And to be able to witness that and see people's nervous systems relax and hear the things that they talk about. You know, I often describe my job as like being like in grad school because every residency is a new group of people that are there to be vulnerable and to create a unit while they're there and to hear their conversations and to listen to their vulnerabilities in their life. It's a great privilege.
Oh.
It's a humbling, great, great privilege.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you're very much a part of that because you're now the director of the artistic experience. At one point you were artist in residence in 2022.
Yeah.
So you did that for a year or so.
Yeah.
Now though you have this new position where you're actively engaged more in sort of the curation of some of these shows. Tell us what your role is and how that's developing.
Well, Brad's heard me say this a lot, but I call my job, I'm a camp counselor for theater adults. So I'm facilitating the experience. I'm making sure that when they come, I lead them to their rooms. I answer all their questions. I make them feel like they're at home, kind of explain the rules, let them know just exactly what they can expect, and just kind of be that kind of mother hen nurturing kind of force. And I think I am uniquely qualified for this position because, as you mentioned from the very beginning, I've gone through almost all the roles that you can have at NACL. I've been a resident artist. I've been a volunteer. And now I'm on staff. So it's been a wonderful evolution and progression for me in this relationship that I've developed at NACL.
Okay. Cool.
And not just the curating of the choices of who gets to come up and who doesn't, but there are all sorts of other decisions that get made organizationally that are artistic decisions. And I am both skilled and fortunate to be surrounded by people whose opinions I really, really value. Mm. Brett Kaiser, Lindsay, especially, but also Brendan Regenball, who's our technical associate, who has a long history of producing theater in New York City and beyond. But beyond just like the curatorial decisions, like if there's something that I'm thinking, oh, I want to try this, like programmatically or just administratively with the organization, I always ask what people think. And if people are into it, then we do it. And if Lindsay's like, I don't think that's a good idea, I listen. I'm like, okay. Let's talk about this. Yeah. And like, if Lindsay says it's not going to work, or if has a hesitation about like some details and we need to iron them out. And the same with Brett, like Lindsay's participation in the way things feel at NACL goes beyond the curation and goes beyond the feeling of like how she's dealing with the artists and things like that on the ground, which are both huge, but there's also all these other things that Lindsay has influence over that are, for me, part of the direction of NACL as a group, as like an organism in itself, if that makes sense.
We also like to say that we assume good faith. That's a comment that we say amongst each other all along. We're all on the same team. We all have the same goal. If we have different ideas about how to get there, that's okay. We all know that. Right. We have the same North Star, and we assume best intentions with each other.
Yeah. That's great. That's great. And you feel safe in that way, too. I mean, there's trust, and there's feeling of safety that your opinions are going to be valued.
Yeah, and that safety radiates out. Yeah. And so when the artists walk in, they feel like, okay, this place is chill.
And we often hear, at the end of the week, and I think we've talked about this before, I do this thing with Lindsay, in fact, called the Periodic Table Talks.
Yep,
we do. In which I interview the artists, and Lindsay is generally there at the very least. Sometimes she'll actually do the interviews, but if I'm there, I'll do most of the interview. Lindsay will be operating the camera, and then we'll participate as an interviewer for a question at the end. But one of the things that often comes up from the artists during these interview sessions is one of the things that makes NACL different and good for them is that it is artist run, and that they've been to other residency centers where it's run by administrators. It's not run by artists. Mm-hmm. And for them, that makes a huge difference. And I think you can sort of get a sense, especially from what Lindsay's saying, about why that's the case.
Yeah. Well, we've been talking with Lindsay Anderson and Brad Krumholz. We're going to take a break at this point and come back to the second half of our conversation, where I want to talk a little bit about what's happening this coming season. Okay, we are back to the second half of our conversation with Lindsay Anderson and Brad Krumholz of NACL. We talked a lot about the NACL process, even though we talked about some of that last year, Brad. I think it's still important to refresh the memory of the people who listen to understand the work that is being done at NACL and how different and how special that really is. And so I'm always glad to go back to that. But now I want to see, we got some stuff coming up this year, a lot of big productions, or I should say, you got a big roster of shows. Mm-hmm. We mentioned The Outrage before. There's going to be The Outrage 3, so that'll be coming up this year as well. And looking back to the last year's residency, it did very well, as you mentioned, how special that is and providing that space for people to come up and see.
Well, I want to start by just backing up for a quick second and say something about The Outrage. The version of The Outrage that's coming up this year is actually for the first time in collaboration with the Deepwater Literary Festival.
Oh, okay.
And so the sharing at the end of that week is actually where they're going to be working at NACL that week. And then on Saturday, instead of sharing at NACL, it's going to be shared in Narrowsburg I'm not sure the venue yet, but as part of the Deepwater Literary Festival.
Okay.
So we're really excited about that. That's a little change for this year. So I wanted to share that.
All right. So we have that coming up. There's a gentleman, I think he's probably one of the ones that are going to come up real quick, Mr. Kenneth Kang.
Our first Deep Space residency is Kenneth, yeah.
Yeah. So that is coming up when?
That is coming up on May 9th.
May 9th.
Yeah, so he'll be the very first week of May. He'll be up there the whole week. And then on Saturday, May 9th, he will be sharing his work with us. He's a really interesting performance creator and playwright. When we selected him, we didn't know that he worked with a company called Oye Group, which was actually in our season last year and has been up a number of times over the past few years, led by an artist named Flaco Jimenez. And yeah, we didn't realize that Kenneth actually works in their office. So he's kind of part of that world down in Bushwick, Brooklyn. And the performance that he is creating is a new performance that is, it's an all Filipino cast, and it's based on his experience as a Filipino American. And what I remember from his application was about war, and it was about motherhood. It was called AMA, A-M-A, I think, which means mother. And it was about the relationship of motherhood and family to military conflicts and things like that. But his work is really, really interesting, and he's an upcoming voice in the New York playwriting scene, so we're really happy to have him.
All right, so after that, we have another thing, The Stinking Nose. What is that? Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure.
I know there's onions involved.
The Stinking Nose actually happens at the end
there's
of the
food
year.
Involved,
that actually, that's oh, the yeah. last one is of, it? Of okay. the year. That's in November. That's November 14th.
Oh, yeah. That's way back at the end. Okay.
Yeah, that's okay. We can go out of order.
I pulled stuff I said that interested me. I
was the like, Stinking Nose is to, if I were to sort of distill it to a phrase, it's about the cultural significance of garlic.
Okay. It's garlic, not onions. Okay.
No, very specifically okay. garlic. It's okay. about, and specifically garlic as something which is like an essential component of different cuisines, specifically Eastern European and Jewish historically cuisines, but also other cultures.
Yeah, Italian.
Yeah, for example. Yeah. And the ways in which garlic is simultaneously held up as a core of these cultures and also vilified. In a certain way, it's like it stinks like garlic, and that it's almost like garlic is a very sort of like earthy, like almost like peasant fare. There's something very lowly about the perception of garlic historically, and so these artists, Leonie Bell, Matt Correas, and Brandon Wolf, have been working together for a while on this piece, and it's about their own personal histories, their own family histories, like ethnically, in relation to garlic and the food that they eat and the food that they grew up eating. And I believe there will be cooking the show. So part of what they're doing is it's a cuisine-based show. I imagine we'll do it in the theater, but there's always a chance we'll do it in the kitchen of the house.
Oh, well, that's a great idea. Yeah, that stuck out for me because I love garlic. I have no problem with garlic. I love the smell of garlic cooking. I put it in almost everything, and it's got medicinal effects
exactly.
as well. So
you put it in your breakfast cereal?
No, I don't eat breakfast cereal, but I it's not unheard of me to eat pasta in the morning that has a garlic
okay.
in it.
Yeah.
So
there you go.
There you have it. All right, what else you got? Give us your lineup.
Oh, right.
I'll let you go in the order of appearance.
Sure. So. Well, the next one after Kenneth Kang is Carol Performance Group, C-A-R-O-L. And that's on May 30th. It's based on a Eugene O'Neill play, a really not well-known Eugene O'Neill play called Dynamo. And this is a company whose work I saw at the Brick Theater last year or 2 years ago. And I was really impressed with the way that they took a space and made it come alive with all sorts of objects and video and objects that have video and a lot of really, really interesting and innovative uses of space and scenography and performance elements.
So are they bringing that piece that you just
described? No, they're bringing a new one.
Okay,
yeah.
So they're bringing a new piece.
Yeah, much okay. of the, oftentimes we'll base our judgment of groups on their previous
sure.
work,
okay.
but the stuff that they're coming up with is new and we trust them.
Yeah.
And oftentimes when they're in there for the week, we kind of have no idea what they're doing.
Oh.
We'll poke our heads in every now and then just to make sure that everything's okay. But I'm as surprised as anyone usually on Saturday night by what we experience.
Yeah.
And so,
you know what you're gonna get.
people get what I get what they get.
That's a really interesting point, Lindsay, when that trust that you have to have in the artists, how often is that successful? I mean, is there a time when you go, oh, what did we just do? And you don't have to name any names. But have there been times when you worry about, or maybe you haven't seen it? You don't see it until the audience sees it.
Well, I'm going to tread lightly, but I definitely think that you get kind of a feeling for the people during the week. So whether or not your personal aesthetic is delighted by what they bring or not, you definitely get to know them as people, and you get to know their intentions. And regardless of where they are in the process, you trust them to do the best that they can. And everybody that comes, they're so grateful for this deep space and slow time that we give. And there's always that respect there. So I definitely think that we trust that whatever they bring, they're bringing to the best of their ability, and that should be championed.
So that's experimental theater, yeah. Right there, folks.
Right.
And again, you have an audience that loves that. You have the people who just want to come and see that and be engaged in that. So that's great. What else we got after that?
After that is The Outrage, which we already spoke about.
Yep.
But then there is another piece by an artist whose name is Irina Kruzhilina. And she is a Russian artist. And I encountered her work at La Mama last year. The core of Irina's work is a deep research into things that are happening now in the socio-political moment,
okay,
and bringing them to life by creating material, written material and staged material that is directly, in a sense, some people might call it documentary theater kind of work. Got it's it. Called Notice to Appear. And the way she describes it is a hybrid theatrical performance and stage public tribunal that exposes the hidden mechanics of U.S. immigration courts and the arbitrary forces determining asylum seekers' fates. It interrogates the roles of all court actors and the public's responsibility in the ongoing asylum crisis. So that's a little description of what that is. And I'm really also excited about this other artist who's a Lebanese artist named Roya El-Chab. This would be really particularly poignant given the current things that are going on,
yeah,
especially in the Middle East area. This will be the third performance in a trilogy that she's been working on, and it's called The Immortal. And it will revisit the invasion of southern Lebanon in 1978 and the displacement of her family from the village to Beirut.
Mm.
So that's just one of the remaining performances. We've got other ones coming up as well.
Both of those last ones you mentioned, very timely.
Yeah.
And I think audiences will plug right into that.
Yeah, and I think one of the things about these groups who are creating theater right now is that when you're creating theater in the living moment, you're engaging with the moment that we're all existing in. And so it's emerging out of this cultural moment.
And that premieres when?
That premieres August 8th is when that happens.
Okay, so we're going deep into the season now, going that far. I do want to jump back a little bit, Lindsay. We kind of just glazed over your career as an actress. I wanted to talk about, you won an award for Best Actress for a show called Let Him Eat Steak.
Wow, you did your research. Fantastic.
And yeah, so I really wanted to know who you were.
Yeah.
What do you remember about that moment and that play? Was that play you also wrote too?
I also wrote,
okay.
Yeah. That was part of the Barrow Group had a one-act festival in 2012. And luckily I had already produced with Proto Bread that piece about a year before. And so it was wonderful to bring that back and to perform it to a larger audience. And everybody that worked on that show with me is a member of Bread now.
Yeah.
So that was in our kind of courtship period. But it was the first one act that I had written. It was a wonderful first experience. And to get that validation was, of course, really lovely.
So that sparked, I'm sure, a thirst or a hunger for doing more and writing more. Tell us a little bit about your play that I'm looking for the name here in my notes and I just can't find it, but it was based on Anne Sexton.
Yeah.
That
it's called
play,
God Is in Your Typewriter.
God Isn't, Thank You. And
yeah.
And that, when I saw that title, that really drew me. That's what made me do the research on it. Because, wow, what is this about? Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, when I went to school for poetry, I'd never seen a picture of Anne Sexton. So I was really familiar with her work, and I loved her work, namely a book called Transformations, where she takes Grimm Brothers fairy tales and makes
That's
a
right.
very dark domestic twist on them. It was so deliciously dark and
Macabre,
funny.
Yeah,
but funny too. She was just a master at funny darkness, which is my favorite type of darkness and comedy. But then a couple years ago, a local poet, Laura E.J. Moran, sent me a picture of Anne Sexton and said that I should portray her. And there the physical resemblance was a little striking. So I'm like, okay, let's go into this. So I read all the biographies of Anne Sexton, and it was amazing to me, her life and everything that she went through. She was a uneducated housewife in suburban Boston, and 10 years later, she wins the Pulitzer Prize in poetry. I mean, this ascent and then a very fast destruction. That's great stuff to play. So I was completely drawn in by that, and I wrote it extremely fast. It just kind of poured out. Every now and then as a writer, you get to have that experience. I mean, most of the time it's like chopping wood and carrying water. But sometimes you just feel like you are a conduit, like it had to be made. And so I wrote it really fast, and luckily I was able to take that and into another deep space residency at NACL.
Yeah.
In 2024. Yeah.
Was it?
Yeah, it was 2024.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
So that was incredible that Bread Arts was like, yes, we want to do this. And we mounted it at NACL, and then we were able to do it again in the city just this past January.
Oh, great. And how was it received?
I think it was received really positively.
Yeah. It was received greatly. Yeah. Greatly received.
Yes.
It was awesome.
Oh, yes. So you went to go see it.
Yeah. Yes. Brad's been a big supporter of this show, and it was... Oh, it's just a blessing. I'm just humbled and filled with gratitude that my best friends, who are also the most talented people I know, wanted to partake in it and keep this story in the air. And hopefully we'll be able to keep doing it. I think it's got legs.
You've also described your work as punk rock theater.
Yes, well, Brett is very much like that. We are.
What does it mean? Punk rock theater. I mean,
it's very like DIY. We're scrappy. We don't have a lot of money. To Brad's point, all of us are exuberant volcanoes to some degree or another. And luckily, over 10 years ago, we all found each other, and we all had that kind of ethos of we can do it ourselves. We don't need anybody, you know, like so. I think that's what we mean when we say punk rock. Punk rock is also known to be quite energetic and passionate, and you're going to get that in a Bread show regardless of what the subject matter is.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So the process when you're creating there, it seems very, very similar to what happens in Deep Space as a group. What is your, when you have, again, a large cast like Murder on the Dance Floor, you have divergent views, divergent opinions. Mm-hmm. What is Bread's process for resolution for that?
Yeah, great question. Well, first off, I will say that we have such trust in each other. Not just love, which is so much love, but trust. We have so much faith in the ability of each person in the group. And therefore, when we're developing a piece, we kind of freely take turns. Like, this time you're going to be the writer. This time you're going to do this. This time you're going to do that. And we're all multi-hyphenate performers. So all of us either play instruments and write and act or any number of things. So there's that trust that we bring into the process. How we say no, I think the attitude is that the best idea always rises to the top and is instantly recognized. Mm. It's undeniable. It's like, yes. And that's what we trust. That, ooh. So once we have that, that's how we trust, whether it's the right call or not. Yeah.
Wow. And it's like a family, really.
Well, extremely so. Extremely so. It's the artistic accomplishment of my life.
Wow. Wow. Well, congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
I mean, that sounds like a wonderful, wonderful thing. So Brad, going back to you, we have a big season coming up. What are you hoping to achieve this season?
Well, one thing is that we're about to undergo some capital renovations on our property.
Yes, you were talking about
so
that.
So right now, for the past little while, we have been focusing on the artist residence building, Lakewood House, which is a 12-bedroom former resort hotel, boarding house hotel. And we are making it ADA accessible for the first time in its history. We are going to be putting a ramp up to the front door. We're going to make sure that it's possible to get in through the front door with the wheelchair and to access a public bathroom on the first floor that will accommodate wheelchairs. In addition to that, we have taken what was the one half of the first floor of the house, which was our office, and we're making most of that an ADA accessible bedroom and bath and shower facility. And that's all happening right now, and it's been a process, and that's the beginning of something. But in the spring, as we get underway with our season, we're going to be having a fundraising campaign, not just for the capital renovations, but for opening access to our theater to really make it possible so that as many people from as many different backgrounds with as many specific needs can make it into our theater and are welcome to be in our theater and experience what we have to offer. But right now, for 2026, we have a really exciting season for April through the end of November of Deep Space residencies and these other events that we're hosting. We're hosting an event called the Mountain Summit. And the Mountain Summit is something that I organized that I'm doing in collaboration with Adam Greenfield, who's the artistic director of Playwrights Horizons in New York City.
Okay.
And we have gathered artistic directors from theaters in New York City to come and have a weekend retreat up at NACL. And it really is just like a private retreat for these leaders of these major theaters in New York for themselves to have a retreat, to get away from the constant grind and difficulties that they face in running these organizations in this cultural climate. And get together and be with other people who are in similar situations so they can kind of kvetch together, but also just to spend time in fellowship with each other, to get out of the city, to enjoy the peace and quiet that we have to offer up here. And then also we're going to have facilitated conversations to talk about what they, as a group of unaffiliated individuals, can think about what the future of theater in this particular cultural climate can look like, and what are the steps we can take to help make that a reality.
Lindsay, anything that you would like to, did I miss anything? And
I don't think so. It's a privilege to be able to talk about all of this.
Oh, yeah.
It really is an honor.
I love it. I enjoy it. All right. So I want to thank you both for coming out today. I love it when people come to the studio and get to sit face to face talking to you and engaging in that way. It's always a lot fun. And the sound quality is better too.
Mm-hmm. This is wonderful. Thank you so much for coming. Thank you so much, Tom.
Really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Woo-wee. Fun. Oh, my thanks once again to Brad Krumholz and Lindsay Anderson for joining me this evening for the work that they continue to bring to NACL. They certainly provide artists with the freedom to explore, to take risks, and to develop work in a way that aren't always possible in the more traditional settings. And we learned a lot about that in talking with Brad and Lindsay tonight. And just as importantly, they invite audiences into that process, right? Making us not just the observers, not just sitting there and, you know, watching, but participants in the evolution of new theater, along with so many of the theater companies throughout our region, right? NACL helps ensure that the arts remain a living, breathing part of our cultural landscape here in the Sullivan Catskills. Now, speaking of live theater, it is now time for another episode of The Roving Thespian. That's me. Recently, I had the chance to head over to the Arts Nest to catch Jonathan Charles Fox in Operation Jonathan. It was a full, enthusiastic house. Boy, did we have fun. Clearly, it was a community that knows what it was coming for because it was typical Jonathan. She's sharp, engaging, completely in command of the room from start to finish, from the moment he walked on stage and commented on his shirt and the and the table coverings. He was hysterical, really was. People who saw the show know exactly what I'm talking about. Anyway, he developed a performance that felt both personal and very immediate, and it was a great evening of theater. So here's a little bit of what I experienced that night.
We've just watched Jonathan Charles Fox do Operation Jonathan. I'm here with Beverly Starner. Beverly runs the UDC Network. That's very well known in our area. Beverly, what'd you think of the show tonight?
He's a gem. He's a gem for this area. He just brings light and love and joy, and we are just grateful to have him here.
What did you learn about Jonathan tonight that you didn't know prior to coming here?
That he could do it for so long. That he could stand up on the stage and just go on with these marvelous, just funny stories about his life that he reveals. So he's both very honest and very entertaining.
Very poignant stories, too, I mean, about his life and all the things that have happened to him. That I think every time I sit down and talk with him, I learn more and more about him, and I learned even more tonight. Overall, what would you say to Jonathan? He was standing right in front of you right now.
First of all, he's going to be standing right in front of me because I'm going to go. I just have to hug him. That's the only thing. He knows who he is. He knows how loved he is by us all and what a treasure he is, and just brings a lot of joy.
He does. And I think what you said, that he's a gem, part of this community, is absolutely spot on. And the article that he writes every week for us, in my humble opinion, excellent. And the way he writes is just, it feels like he's talking to you.
He belongs to us. I think that's it. We belong to each other. We, the community, belong to him, and he belongs to us. And aren't we privileged?
We're very fortunate. Beverly, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me. Have a good night.
You too.
How do you feel now, Jonathan?
I feel okay. I will say I'm never the one to say I feel fantastic, but it was a great crowd and a very supportive audience. Yep. So every once in a while, I open myself up a little bit, and that's scary. It's like being on a tightrope. I'm like, I don't know how the audience is going to deal with me talking about a broken heart. But everybody stayed with me, and I appreciate that. And I really, it's important to me that I don't just break down. I get a little verklempt every once in a while. But that's because they're true stories. They're true stories.
Wonderful stories.
Thank you.
Very proud of you.
Thank you.
And Beverly Starnes said it the best. She said, "You are a gem." And that is the word she said. You are a gem.
I appreciate that. I will tell everybody. I will be at the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center.
Yes.
July 11th.
Okay.
And I'm doing a show called Close Encounters of the Jonathan Kind.
Oh.
All paranormal. And I'm going to tell that story. She knows
you know the story.
She does.
Okay. At least the backstory.
Yeah, but I understand we're going to do an hour long or something before then.
You and I.
Yeah.
Yes, we will.
I'll look forward to that.
This was wonderful.
Thank you.
I always think you're so brave to just open up like that. But it is a little cathartic, I will say.
Yeah,
I bet it is.
It is a little cathartic. And Barry knew I was going to tell that story tonight. I had his blessing.
Oh, you did. That's wonderful.
Listen, it wasn't a secret. We were on the front page of the National Enquirer.
Yeah.
It wasn't really that much of a secret. Yeah, yeah.
She was Googling who Barry is.
The NDA has expired, so.
Yeah, I'm so brave.
Yeah, Spelling's NDA has expired. This is Steve Davis, is right behind us, a mainstay at the Forestburg Playhouse. Thank you so much for being here and doing
this. It was a good one to get on film. Yeah.
Good.
Oh, they're going to film it.
He did the videography for it.
Okay,
yep.
Great.
Yep.
We're doing HBO
Steve
special.
Steve does videography
HBO
for me
special.
All the time. Because people are very kind to me, including Steve Davis.
Because it's a one shot only. You get this, you'll never get the same show.
Sure.
You want to capture this.
Yeah. I appreciate it so much. You have no idea.
And as you can hear from those conversations, a good time was had by all. Lots of fun. And it's why I get out there. Get out there and I see these productions. I meet the people, talk with the creators, the artists, talk with the audience members, observe the audience members. I love watching their reactions to all these productions that I go to see. It's a lot of fun, and I encourage you to get out there as well. So again, my thanks to Brad Krumholtz and Lindsay Anderson for joining me this evening and for sharing their insight into the work that's happening over at NACL. And what stands out in that conversation, it's not just the work itself, but the process behind it. It's the willingness to take the risks, to explore new forms, and to invite both artists and audiences into something that is still evolving. And that's what makes spaces like NACL and River Rep and Farm Arts and all the other theater companies that we have in our area so important. They're not just presenting theater, they're creating the conditions for it to grow. Now, as we move into the month of May and hopefully some warmer weather, theater across our region is really beginning to gear up, so get yourselves ready for lots of exciting theater. Kicking things off over at the Playhouse at Museum Village, the creative theater Muddy Waters Players will present Clue on stage. That runs May 1st through the 17th. So today's what, the 29th? I think it is. 27th. Today's the 27th. So May 1st through the 17th. Now, admission for that show includes dessert. And you can find ticket information at theplayhouse.org, @theplayhouse.org for that production. On May 8th, over at Farm Arts Collective, they are hosting Love Ain't Easy, music by Richard Hollier at 7 p.m., and that would be found at the Farm Arts Collective website, where you can get tickets on that, as well as, I believe, My River Tickets NACL.com. On May 9th, NACL continues its Deep Space residency with a performance by Kenneth Kang. That's at 7:30. On the 16th of May, the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance is celebrating their 50th anniversary, folks. It's a big special gala, or gala, at the Sullivan County International Airport in Swan Lake, beginning at 5 p.m. Details for that event at DelawareValleyArtsAlliance.org, as well as information about the holding of auditions for Our Town. Those auditions will happen on May the 20th from 7 to 9:30 p.m. and May the 23rd from 1:30 to 4 p.m. Again, that information can be found at DelawareValleyArtsAlliance.org. Also on May 23rd, River Rep Theater presents Tomorrow Today. It's a new play by Christopher Pedito and his brother. They get his brother's name. With performances at 8 p.m. on the 23rd and the 30th, and matinee performances at 2 p.m. on the 24th and the 31st. Ticket information available at riverrep.org. On May 29th, Shadowland Stages opens its season with The Reservoir. Tickets at shadowlandstages.org. And by the way, in coming events and coming episodes, Shadowland Stages, I'm going to be speaking with Ben Williamson and Brendan Burke of that theater company. They have a lot of good things to say and a big, big season coming up there at Shadowland Stages. So do look out for that. Shadowlandstages.org. And wrapping up the month in May, the 30th, NACL again welcomes Carol Performance Group as part of its Deep Space series. There's a lot happening, as I said, and it's all right here, right in our community. So I'm going to close out today's show with saying, well, good night. And until next time, I'm Tom Candela, and this has been Curtain Call, spotlighting the magic of theater one conversation at a time. Join me next week for another episode of Curtain Call right here on Radio Catskill.